Welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock, and I'll tell you why the distractions may be too much for Dak Prescott this season.
And I'm Colin Cowherd, and I'll tell you why I have no issue with Cam's old teammates being honest about it. Some see it as a shot. Speak for yourself starts now on a Monday.
Oh, I think we agree on Cam. On a Monday.
Finally.
We're agreeing, yeah. All right, hello and welcome. We're joined today by a couple of NBA champions, Steven Jackson and Dante Jones. Let's start with LeBron James, who became the latest target of President Trump's Twitter account Friday night, with the commander and troll attacking LeBron after he said Trump was using sports to divide people during an interview with CNN's Don Lemon. Trump specifically took aim at LeBron's intelligence, saying Lemon made him look smart, which, quote, isn't easy to do. Adam Silver and several star players defended LeBron. Cowherd, should the NBA be worried about this feud?
I don't think so, because I really believe that Trump's audience is the NFL audience to a large degree. I've never felt that with the NBA. The NBA kind of mocks Trump, considers him a cartoon character. They just kind of laugh. Coaches do. Players do. Stars do. There's no pushback. So, I mean, here's what we know about the NFL, and I think this is mostly understood. The NFL has very much been about military, law enforcement, the flag, and middle America. That middle America, that Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, that got Trump into the White House. That's his base. And the NBA, to me, it's almost popular to attack Trump.
Almost.
Yeah, you're right. It is popular. It's a badge of honor. You attack Trump. So I think the NBA kind of rolls their eyes at Trump.
I think they should be a little bit worried about this feud, because I think it's part of a pattern that I think is going to eventually lead to the kneeling coming to the NBA. I see this as LeBron James being positioned and moved into a position to where he's going to take a knee during the NBA season. And I think that's going to be an issue for the NBA, no different than it is for the NFL. I don't think the NBA is going to be allowed to get away with, hey, this problem with black athletes and the President Trump, that's an NFL issue. We're out of it. They're not out of it. Because, again, and we got to just talk factually here, LeBron James actually started this. He poked President Trump first. He basically called him a racist in an interview with Don Lemon. And the fact that Trump responded should be no surprise to anyone. If I drive through a drive-through and speak into the deal and say, give me a Big Mac and fries, when I turn that corner and they got a Big Mac and fries, I'm not shocked. Anybody that knows anything about Trump's history the last 40 years, you talk smack on him, he's going to talk smack back. I think this is going to be an ongoing thing that's going to lead to some protesting in the NBA.
I don't think it gets to that point, because I think it's the players and the league are on the same page. I think if they do any type of protesting, they're going to be on the same page. I think the NBA shouldn't worry about it, because LeBron is handling it right. He's not stooping to the president's level. He's not getting on there sending any threats or saying anything stupid. He's handling it the right way. For some reason, they need to make the president a picture or egg so people won't know it's coming from him, because he's having too much time to stoop low and worry about things that he shouldn't be concerned with. But LeBron has handled it right, like he's handled everything right. And another reason why he's the best player that ever come around in basketball. And I think that the league just needs to leave it alone and let him continue to handle it, because he's doing it right.
Yeah, he definitely is handling this in the right capacity, because the president needs a burner account. He needs something to distance himself from his own personality, because his racial insensitivity, his antics as acting as a fan in this respect right now, because what he is he's mad that the guy he reveres as a player is not on the side as him. You've seen his tweets and saying how he respects LeBron. LeBron's doing everything the right way. LeBron's doing this. LeBron is a great basketball player. And then now, when he doesn't speak in the same light as him, when he's not his fan, when he's speaking the truth because of what the president has done so far, now he's not his fan anymore. Now he likes MJ. And this is like a spoiled brat syndrome. We're supposed to respect the commander-in-chief. You are absolutely correct. But when he acts as the commander-in-chief, when he acts in reverence to the office, That's where he gets his respect from.
Where does it say that we have to respect it?
No, but all the presidents we had so far, even George Bush, we can disagree with his policy. We can disagree with his what he does in office. But if he does not act in a respectful manner, that's where we get these things that athletes come out and speak about him and the reverence that they have so far. And I don't think that it was his place to be able to do that, to be able to distance himself from something that is revered by so many people and is affecting so many people. The things that LeBron James has done for his community, he's earned our respect.
Yeah,
but
right.
The president right now is not earning our respect
at
because
all.
Of how he's speaking about American people.
I think that, though, if you just look at anything about Trump's history over the last 50 years since he came into an adulthood, I've watched documentaries, I've looked at the whole history.
Hasn't changed?
There's nothing he's doing that's any different.
Right.
If you attack him, he's going to attack back. There's nothing shot. And so I didn't expect some sprinkle dust when he went into the presidency, oh, he's gonna be different. I don't have that expectation of him. He's going to be the same bully troll he was all the way up through his time in New York, all the way through his life. He's right on brand. I don't think he's bothered by LeBron James attacking him. I think he's attacking right back, and he's good
if
a feud
continues. He can't be so sensitive.
Who's being sensitive?
The president.
The president
just because LeBron said, I wouldn't sit next to him, I wouldn't talk to him, you can't be sensitive about that, then put out a sensitive tweet. If you're going to say stuff about everything that's going on, if you have something to say about everything, and somebody say something about you or disagree with you, you can't be sensitive.
Steven,
and the president is super sensitive.
How does that not play both ways, though?
Because one's the president, one's an athlete.
Exactly.
One is a reality star who has told you for 40, 50 years who he is. I'm sorry, and I'm not saying this to be offensive, but it's like we have this expectation of white people that if we give them some
that's
title, they magically become somebody else that they're not.
I just don't have that expectation.
When you're giving
an office a title, when you're given the CEO of a company, you're supposed to act like the CEO of the company. When you're given a title of some reverence, you're supposed to act because you're representing a corporation, an entity of people, and you're supposed to act in a responsible manner.
Politics are much less difficult when everybody in a room is aligned on the same in the same tunnel, right? So the NBA is anti-Trump. It is the anti-Trump league. So the question is, should the NBA be concerned about LeBron Trump? No. Commissioner, owner, player, GM, coach, scouts. They're anti-Trump. That's why the Warriors can talk politics. It's easy. The Seahawks do. NFL's not aligned.
I don't think all NBA owners are aligned.
No. Right, no.
I don't think all NBA players are aligned.
No.
I think one
You're
side has been bullied into silence, and you can't say anything, and so they're silent. But the outspoken people, the people that want to be popular over Twitter, yes, they are very highly public anti-Trump and are acting shocked that Trump is acting the same way we have seen him act for 50 years. I'm just not shocked.
We're not shocked.
There are NBA supporters who support Trump, but the NBA is inclusive. And the NBA is when it's right, and when it's wrong, it's wrong. And when there are people who stand in a Republican manner and we respect them and they have those ideals that they stand by, but they do understand when our president is acting in a neglectful behavior.
Part of Trump's critique also included a shot at LeBron's game saying, quote, I like Mike. But Michael Jordan was among the people who jumped to LeBron's defense, saying, quote, I support LJ. He's doing an amazing job for his community. Now, some people are criticizing Jordan for not pushing back more on President Trump. Jason, are you okay with Jordan's response?
I'm not remotely shocked. Again, this is right on brand for Michael Jordan. He does not want to involve himself in politics, and so he's not. And so it's no different than, like I said, when I hit that drive-thru and I turn that corner, they give me what I expect. Michael Jordan just gave me exactly what I expect from Michael Jordan. He's not interested in involving himself in politics.
Yeah, I mean, he's totally on brand. Mike's always been about business. He's been bottom line. He's punched teammates. You know, Mike is all about production, content, sales, Michael. So to me, this doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, in fact, I was surprised he had a tweet. It almost looked reactive.
It almost looked reactive,
and I was surprised Michael would even acknowledge it.
I expected more out of Mike. And the guy that I've looked up to my whole life, and he's been the greatest basketball player to date, I expected him to give us more, give LeBron James more support. Jeannie Buss's comment was perfect. and she's his now. She represents LeBron now for their organization, but she gave the right verbiage to explain what is necessary for our country and what LeBron James is doing, what LeBron James means to our country. Mike said his community. Mm-hmm. It's our community. Like, LeBron James is not only affecting the black community, he's affecting the community. He's making our communities better by trying in one place and trying to extend it to others.
Well, at the end of the day, Mike is allowed to reply to any question that he feels he want to reply to the way he want to reply to it. And nobody can say nothing about it at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. But I think the problem was people wanted him to elaborate and put himself in our shoes and say more of we than he or they. They wanted Mike to put himself in them shoes and put himself as the culture, as the community, like you say. And he hasn't done that. He could have elaborated way more. I expected the same thing you expected, for Mike to stand behind LBJ and say a lot more than what he said. But at the end of the day, what can we do? It's like my man said, that's what we expected from Mike.
There are people, and this is okay. It used to be okay if you said, hey, I'm not really into politics. That was understood. Mm-hmm. My dad kind of talked about the economy and politics. You're not allowed, unfortunately, today to not have an opinion on politics. And what I think is interesting is, Twitter's all about tolerance, but then tolerate people who don't want to get into politics.
But you don't have to be in politics to care about your community. You don't have to be in politics to care about where you live.
But let's just be clear, though, Stephen. I don't think we have evidence that Mike doesn't care about his community. I can show you evidence of Mike spending money in the community, schools in Chicago, prisons. Blah, blah, blah. I don't think, just because he didn't step out here on this LeBron deal, because perhaps, and I don't want to put any thoughts in Mike's mind, but I am someone who tries to stay out of politics. I've never voted. It irritates people. I don't like to talk about things that I'm not that informed on. And everybody else loves to be an expert. I don't. I try to stay in my lane. And I get, trust me, my family all disagree with me about my stance. But Michael Jordan's position might be, man, LeBron called him a bum over Twitter. LeBron went on TV and called him racist. If you know Trump, you know you're going to get a response. I'm good. I'm going to stay out of this.
And that's fine. That's fine, though. That's fine, though. But at the same time, he has the right to respond. But at the same time, it was expected at that moment, after everything's been said.
Whose expectations?
From the culture, from us. At this moment, Mike, there's been a lot said about Mike don't love us. He don't support the community. He's not down with us. It's been a lot said over here. We've all heard it. This was a perfect example for him to stand up there and say, we, or put himself in our shoes and end all that. And he didn't do it.
I expected him to say, you know what, keep my name out your mouth, because it wasn't a Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Donald Trump conversation. It was LeBron James and Donald Trump. And why did you have to bring my name up to divide us, trying to divide us even more?
Right.
That's what he tried to do. It wasn't, the Mike comment wasn't on brand what LeBron James is doing. You didn't have to bring Mike into this. And I expected Mike to come and say, leave me out of this. And LeBron James is doing a great job for our community. That's all I expected.
Let me give you one other possibility, that and this will sound far-fetched, but I believe it's a possibility.
Okay.
I think we're all sitting around, and I watched everybody's heads explode. I don't think Trump's comments were intended to be taken seriously by Donald Trump. I think that's why he said,
That's unfortunate.
I'm just telling you, that's why he said, I like Mike at the end. It was like the sarcasm font, or, look, I'm just joking, this isn't that serious. And this is, the reason why I say that is because long before there was a Donald Trump as president, I've said since 2009 when I joined Twitter, don't take my tweet seriously. If you want to judge me, judge my columns. The stuff over Twitter is just a stream of consciousness, a stream of people's stupid thoughts that are virtually meaningless.
Put an egg as your avatar in too. Put an egg as your avatar in too. You and Donna can both get eggs as your avatar.
Not
as
the commander-in-chief. When you're the commander-in-chief,
everything
have, even if it's unintended, influence. You just have to be better. I mean, that's the reality of it. Our country says you can't even be president until you're this age, you've had this accomplishment, you've been voted on by him. You have too much power. I mean, if that's the case, you could say, hey, we're bombing Russia. Sarcasm. I mean, Ronald Reagan.
That's a real action, Colin.
But I mean, Ronald Reagan got massive heat one time for, on his radio address in the preamble, just joking about bombing Russia. Now, that was in a time of no social media. But it was like, whoa, President. Not acceptable. We got an adversary out
there. my position is, though, hasn't this guy made it crystal clear the rules that everybody else obeyed in the presidency? I'm not going to.
Right.
And so I'm just telling you.
But are we normalizing it?
Are we saying it's okay?
It's okay.
I mean, that's
the
question.
Are we saying it's okay for the president chief to
just act? If somebody acts inappropriately, that doesn't mean we should normalize any behavior that's not appropriate.
And his position would be, and his supporters would be, we've normalized so many things, that previously we would have thought was unconscionable, unbelievable, that the fact this dude sends out stupid tweets, this is where we draw the line in the sand, based on all the other things I've seen normalized in this society?
As the best nation in the world, should we stand for a commander-in-chief that wants to be normal? Should we? He represents us as a country. And should we normalize his behavior in representing us? We shouldn't stand for a commander-in-chief that's just going to say, you know, I'm just a regular guy and I'm going to act like just like you. No, he represents us every time he steps in front of other nations.
My point would be, if we don't like Trump, we should do things differently in this society so that no one like him again would ever get enough votes to be president. And so while we sit around and try to fix him, he's not fixable.
Right.
He's a billionaire. We got to go. He's a billionaire with 70 years old. He's not fixable. Is our behavior fixable so we'd never get in this position again? And so y'all can run around trying to fix a 70-year-old billionaire, or you can look in the mirror and change the man in the mirror. Michael Jackson said it a long time ago. That's how you affect change. Be the change you want to see. And so if you don't want to be involved in getting attacked, don't attack somebody.
Hi, guys. It's The Herd, Colin Cowherd. Before we get back to Speak for Yourselves podcast, I want to tell you about Toyo Tires. UFC fighters are tough. You know what else? Toyo Tires. That's why Toyo has been around and a proud sponsor of UFC. Like the fighters, they're built for battle. It's an all-or-nothing philosophy. Aggressive design, durability, on- and off-road capabilities. Yes to all of them. Living life on the highway? Toyo, T-O-Y-O, has you covered. No matter what you drive, Toyo has what you need. And frankly, the tires just look cool. Nothing ruins your day faster than being stranded on the side of a road with a flat tire. Any vehicle, any terrain, all or nothing. The next time you need tires, ask for Toyo. To experience more, visit T-O-Y-O, toyotires.com/UFC. toyotires.com/UFC. Now, let's get back to the show.
All right, welcome back. Joined now by Fox NFL analyst Tony Gonzalez. Let's move to the National Football League, where former Panther receiver Kelvin Benjamin just went after his old quarterback Cam Newton, saying he would have been more successful as a receiver if he'd played with, you know, an accurate quarterback with more knowledge, like Aaron Rodgers, Eli, or Big Ben. Cam, for his part, took the high road in a response on Instagram.
Hey, I ain't gonna go back and forth with him. I'm just gonna work, you feel me? That's all it is. You know what it is. Just work, baby.
All right, Whitlock, have an issue with Benjamin calling out Cam.
Yes and no. You know what's odd? The first thing I thought was, I remember when Benjamin first left, it was about how close he and Cam
That's
were.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Cam was going to be upset. Listen, Kelvin Benjamin showed up overweight as a rookie, never got into best shape, and a lot of this is on him. No, because as a journalist, anytime I get an athlete to tell me what they really authentically think, it's a great day.
Yeah.
And so he has said, he's put voice to a thought that a lot of people have. He's not accurate. He's not a student of the game. And I would have played better with a quarterback who was more into the game. That's what Kelvin Benjamin thinks, that there's probably some truth in that. There's also the other side, again, Kelvin Benjamin, there's some things he should have done to be a better performer.
It didn't bother me. Cam's a little like Westbrook. Oklahoma City and Charlotte are smaller towns. Cam and Westbrook are flawed but dynamic players, and those markets feel like we're getting talked about. People talk about us. People talk about the Panthers. People talk about OKC. The organization has coddled them mostly, and criticism, you get real pushback. I think Cam's support in Charlotte is almost Brady-like in New England. The difference is one's been a huge winner. I don't think he said anything we don't believe to be true, But you criticize Cam and Charlotte, kind of a college town. You criticize Westbrook and OKC. By the way, both struggle with accuracy. You're going to get major pushback. Cam's following in Charlotte is college town stuff. You know how college towns are. They're loyal to a fault. Pro towns are loyal to a point. College towns are loyal to a fault. And I don't think he said anything people haven't talked about for years.
Yeah, but my thing is why. I just don't understand why you would go after somebody that you used to play with. And one thing that I know going forward from this, he better put up some numbers now. And the guys he's playing with out there, I'd rather have Cam Newton throwing me the football than the guys he's playing with now. So I just don't understand why you would call out an ex-player. We all have an opportunity to do that. Cam could call you out saying that you came in overweight, you're lazy, maybe you didn't know the playbook, whatever it is, you're always hurt, you're not on the – whatever it is. You can go at almost any player. We're all flawed in some respect. It doesn't make sense why you would go after it. I mean, Cam Newton is a dynamic player. He's an MVP of this league. Is he an accurate guy? No, we know that, though. I mean, his biggest attribute is being athletic, 6'6", 265 pounds. We know what he brings to the table. When he plays that ball of Cam Newton ball, which is where he's running the ball, that's when he's an MVP caliber guy.
Look, I'm hoping that there's some upside to this because I'm someone that's not giving up on Cam because I think he's a really talented guy. I think he's capable of playing at an MVP level again. I think there may be some upside here in Kelvin Benjamin publicly calling him out and putting some pressure on Cam Newton. I hope that Kelvin Benjamin also was man enough to say this to Cam when they were teammates or in private, and this isn't just some pot shot from far away now that I'm in another city. But now that it's here, I think it puts a little pressure on Cam. And I hear you about Charlotte, and I used to live in Rock Hill, South Carolina, which is a suburb of Charlotte. 15 miles south of Charlotte. It is a college town, but I do think they've had enough of what they've seen from Cam in recent years, and they'll want to see Cam improve under Norv Turner in a different offensive system. And if they don't see that improvement, they're going to take Kelvin Benjamin's words and they're going to shove them down Cam's throat.
Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. Because I think, listen, we had Greg Jennings on today. I had you on today. D'Angelo Hall. I've interviewed 10 guys who have played with him, played against him, and they all said the same thing. Yeah, he's huge, great athlete, but he could be better at the quarterback thing. It's almost like with Westbrook. Yes, he's dynamic, but he's not the easiest guy to play with. That's what you're saying about Cam. He's not the easiest guy to play with. I think it's very difficult to get people to change when they're rich. When you're rich and pretty successful, people will do change when your health's at risk, or if you don't change, you're getting a divorce, or you're desperate. Cam's not desperate. He's got an MVP, he's got a lot of money, he's got a great family, and he's got support in the community.
I'm not sure if he has the level of respect around the league that he wants. And I don't, certainly wealth and youth create a level of delusion. But Cam's getting older and older every year, and you start snapping out of it because he went to the Super Bowl once. He had the MVP once. He hasn't been in the MVP conversation since.
Well, you've been a star. Does this kind of criticism bother you if somebody took a shot at you?
Yeah, it bothers you. I mean, you take it, absolutely, you're thinking about it. But at the same time, I think Cam Newton, if he is getting older, and if he doesn't have that athleticism, then he's not going to be that MVP quarterback. He has to be Cam Newton in order to be successful, just like Russell Wilson. I think Russell Wilson's great. He's great in the pocket, but what makes him truly special is when he gets outside of the pocket. That's what Cam Newton has to have. That's what Norv Turner better be game planning and putting in a system that's going to utilize Cam Newton's talents. Otherwise, it's over. I don't think you'll ever see that MVP-type guy again if he's trying to be sitting back in the pocket, being a slicer and dicer. He's just not that quarterback.
All right, welcome back. Tony Gonzalez is back. We're joined now by longtime NFL player D'Angelo Hall. Let's move to Dallas, where Dak Prescott's public opposition to kneeling during the national anthem continues to reverberate with an artist painting a mural portraying the Cowboys quarterback as the main character from Get Out, implying he's being hypnotized by racist white people. Dak was asked about the mural yesterday, but held his ground.
Everybody has their own opinion. As I said, I made my statements, I stand by what I said, and as I said, some people may have misunderstood it or whatever, but I know when I said, I felt strongly about what I said, and It is what it is.
All right, Coward, do you think the anthem issue will distract Dak this season?
No, because I think in Dallas, he is beloved, and they're on his side on the anthem issue. Again, I think politics is easier when you have alignment. I think Dak's really mature. I think he's really smart. I think he's really defiant. I think he's going to be great for the next 12 years. I'm a huge fan of him. This continues to be why I'm a huge fan of him. He doesn't have the best arm. He was a fourth-round prospect. What blows me away with Dak every time he's asked a tough question, right answer. And he's just saying, I gave you my opinion, I can handle it. He's not afraid of criticism. And I do think, I've told you this before, on this anthem situation, the market matters. You know, San Francisco and Seattle are pro-kneeling. Dallas and Charlotte, a little more conservative, are not as pro-kneeling. So I think in Dallas, it plays okay.
The mural is in Dallas. This is a Cowboys fan taking a pot shot at him in Dallas. I do think it's going to be tough for Dak. I think that social media has such control over our thoughts on race, and people want to extract a penalty for Dak Prescott saying something that earlier today, Colin, I went back and looked at what LeBron James said when Colin Kaepernick started kneeling, and it was almost word for word the exact same thing that Dak Prescott said. And LeBron said, no, I'm not going to kneel, no disrespect to the guys that are, blah, blah, blah. It was almost word for word what Dak said. And this is what just keeps blowing my mind. We have put a pressure on NFL players that we're not putting on other players, other athletes. NBA players have guaranteed contracts. Allegedly, they have great relationships with their ownership. And so if there was a play with guaranteed contract, all the money they make from shoe companies, why aren't those players being called on to kneel with this kind of pressure that we're putting on Dak Prescott? LeBron James, Dak Prescott say the same thing. Dak Prescott gets ridiculed. LeBron James says, well, it's perfectly fine. NBA, you guys, you don't have to kneel. You don't have to do anything to hurt your bottom line. I think Dak's under a lot of pressure. It'll be interesting how he handles it.
Yeah.
Well, I think Dak is under a whole immense ton of pressure. And for him, you know, I don't think it was necessarily what he said. I think it's the way he said it. He almost dismissed the black community is what I felt like. Had he come and said, well, guys, if you want to kneel, then I understand where you're coming from. It seems as though Dak made his stance and he felt as though his stance was the only one that mattered. And so for me personally, I would have liked to hear Dak say, but I understand where the other side is coming from. I don't think I heard him say that.
He did say that, but you didn't hear it, but he did say that.
When I watch that tape and I see him respond, I'm kind of with you. I love that because that's something that I didn't have when I played. What I'm saying is the ability to say, I said it. If you don't like it, that's too bad for you. That he's being fearless. And I think if anything, this is going to help him in that locker room to me. Because I know if I was in that locker room with him, I'm like, right for you, whether I agree with you or not, you stand by what you said. He's showing that he's fearless. I think this is why he's had so much success on the field, coming from where he's come from. I love it. I think this is great. And it is sad to think that because he's speaking his mind and he's saying this is my choice and it's what I believe in, and you're going to call me. I mean, that type of mural, I'm selling out. I'm in a trance. It's not fair at times, but that is the world that we live in now.
But I love how he handled it. I think the mural got defaced already.
Yeah, it did. Someone
ridiculous.
Put sunglasses.
Whoever put that up there is ridiculous.
I agree with D'Angelo, though, about the pressure he's under, because the only way this is going to work for Dak is if he plays at a high level. If he struggles on the field, the guy that did this mural, he's going to have a whole pack of guys doing murals, and there's going to be an attack on Dak. If he plays well, I think this is going to work wonderfully well for him. He'll be more celebrated. He'll quiet his critics. But if he struggles at all, and particularly with Dez Bryant not being there, I think he's going to be under attack.
All right, to Canton, where the Hall of Fame class was inducted over the weekend, highlighted by a rousing speech from our friend Ray Lewis. But now the Hall is reportedly considering a new rule requiring candidates to sign a pledge that they'll actually show up to the ceremony. After T.O. decided to hold his own induction in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Not surprisingly, T.O. used the occasion to go after the Hall of Fame.
So I want to address the elephant in the room. Many of you may be wondering why we're here instead of Canton. There's been a lot of speculation and false reports as to why I chose not to be there. I would like to set the record straight. It's not because how many times it took for me to be voted into the Hall. It's about the mere fact that the sports writers are not in alignment with the mission and core values of the Hall of Fame. These writers disregarded the system, the criteria, and bylaws in which guys are inducted, and ultimately the true meaning of the Hall of Fame and what it represents. I wanted to take a stand so the next guy coming after me will not have to go through what I and others have gone through. Whether it's 3 years or 45 years, you should get what you rightfully earned.
All right, Whitlock, was Hall of Fame weekend better without Terrell Owens?
Better without, I'm not 1,000% sure, but I don't think the Hall of Fame weekend was in any way damaged by T.O.'s absence. And I was kind of shocked because I went into it with the expectation that, because I love Hall of Fame weekend, I went into it with the expectation it was going to be hurt by him not being here. He was an afterthought. I thought Randy Moss, Brian Dawkins, Ray Lewis, Jerry Kramer, their speeches were so incredible. It's probably my favorite Hall of Fame weekend ever in terms of speeches. And I did make it a point to watch T.O.'s deal in Chattanooga, and it didn't have any impact on me and how I enjoyed the things that went on that night with the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. I don't think they should change the rule. If a guy doesn't want to be there, so what? I don't think it hurt the Hall ceremony at all.
I don't think it hurt the ceremony. I think T.O. would have made it better because he's a star. The one thing I'll say about Hall of Fames is most industries that have Hall of Fames, like there's not an insurance salesman Hall of Fame. There's a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and a Broadcasters Hall of Fame and a Football Hall of Fame. Those are industry with stars, highly compensated, often eccentric people. You have to understand there'll be divas. Kiss didn't show up. David Bowie didn't show up Rock and Roll. So, like, these Hall of Fames, you're not dealing with, like, average American citizens. You're dealing with people who have been elevated, enriched, empowered, worshipped, and then occasionally you get a diva. So just deal with it. Like, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, guys trashed hotel rooms for 30 years. That was part of being a rock and roller in the 60s and 70s. So I look at T.O. and I think, you know, not everybody in the Hall of Fame. Some guys are offensive linemen. I mean, some guys are star quarterbacks. Some guys are, you know, Brett Favre-ish, and some guys are wonderful like Tony Gonzalez. Oh, not everybody's much. The same.
You're too much. Too much. The way I look at it, it did get hurt to me. I think it got hurt. T.O. is a big-time star. Hey, he's one of the best receivers to ever go. You've covered him. This guy was the truth. And should he have been voted in on the first ballot? Yes, I think so. That's my opinion. I think so. But the way he went around about it, I don't agree with it. I think you cut your nose off to spite your face. Even though I agree with everything you said, it does not make sense according to the bylaws of the Hall of Fame induction process. You don't care about what they did off the field. It's all about what you did on the field. So he has a point there, and I understand everything. But I think the Hall of Fame, for sure, it would have been better if he was there with all those guys, Ray Lewis, Brian Dawkins, all those people. It would have been better if T.O. was there. That's absolutely, I think, from a fan perspective, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have loved to see T.O. there. I think everyone knows when you talk about receivers in the National Football League over the past 20, 30 years and then go back even longer than that as guys who are in the Hall of Fame, T.O. is definitely on that list, and he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. But knowing him, the person, everyone knew this was kind of going to happen, that T.O. was going to use this opportunity to make a poke at the voting process. I thought it would have gave even more of a voice and legs had he done this there in Canton. And so I think this is definitely a situation. It's not just about T.O., you know, his Hall of Fame speech. The reason I wanted him there is because, you know, I kind of watched him over the years, you know, having to cover him. And so I kind of watched his struggle. I watched him, you know, be this great player. And, you know, it was almost, you know, those touchdowns you scored on me, you deserve to be there. I want to see you there. And, you know, this is a moment he can't ever get back. You know, those guys would have embraced him, as you saw. It wasn't about anything else. Once you get the chance to put that gold jacket on, you know, you heard these guys talk about it. You become part of this family. And I think a lot of those guys wanted to see T.O. there. We as fans wanted to see him there. You know, I don't think the rules should change, to each his own. But I don't think you'll see any, well, a lot of guys following suit and not going.
I agree with that.
This is such a huge stage. Tony, I know you're looking forward to that day.
And I've been to three of them. Mm-hmm. I got to see Marcus Allen, I got to see Michael Strahan, I got to see Warren Moon. So I got to experience this weekend. It is amazing. And that's the thing, that's why I'm saying it would have been better also, too, for the people around him, mm-hmm. his family members, all the people that he thanked. They missed out.
20 years from now, do you think T.O. regrets it?
Oh, without question. He may regret it next week. D'Angelo's point, though, about him going there and carrying his message on that stage, that's kind of why I'm glad he didn't go. Because I think if he had gone, he would have been disruptive. And if you listen to his speech in Chattanooga, what blew me away, he had more reverence for Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan than any former football player. T.O.'s not a football guy. That's why he's not at the Hall of Fame. T.O. was a basketball player who could play football, and that's where his gift was. But his reverence for football isn't there, or he would have been there. And so that place and that enshrinement isn't really for people that don't love the game that way. That dude talked about Kobe and Michael at his Hall of Fame. And I'm like, what the hell did they have to? But it motivated him. But he's not a football guy. He's a basketball player.
Welcome back. D'Angelo Hall is back, and we're joined now by college football reporter Bruce Feldman. Let's move to college football, where Ohio State announced they expect the investigation into Urban Meyer's handling of his assistant's domestic abuse allegations to be completed within 14 days. After being caught in a lie about what he knew and when, Urban now insists he followed the proper protocol in handling the issue. Whitlock, you think Urban will survive this scandal?
I'm starting to think he is. I said it last week that Gene Smith is going to be Frankie Pantangelo from Godfather 2. If you remember, he committed suicide while in prison and they took care of his family. That's what they're going to do for Gene Smith. He's going to bite the bullet here and let Urban survive. And that's where I think this is headed. When they start talking about, hey, we're going to wrap this up in 2 weeks, they have figured out a way out.
I agree. I think he survives. I do think it's possible there's a suspension, but I would go to you on this. What is your take?
You know, not just so after our show, Zach Smith, the fired coach, he went on a media tour and bounced around. And I don't think he necessarily helped his own cause, but I think he helped Urban's cause to some degree. And I think what they both did was kind of put the ball back in Gene Smith's court, where they said, hey, Gene Smith was the one who actually notified Urban Meyer. And if what he says is true about being Urban, if he did follow procedures and protocols and did not mislead anybody, I think he will survive it. I have no idea what's going to happen with Gene Smith here, because I think the big question is, if all this stuff went on in 2015, why did you fire him the night before Big Ten Media Days, when you didn't give the best answers, whether you blatantly lied or misled a lot of people? There's still a lot of questions we don't know, and that's a lot to get sorted out within the next 14 days.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, great football coaches survive bad situations. You look at Bobby Petrino. So, like you said, we don't know all the details right now. So I think he survives not knowing all the details, but depending on how that investigation comes out and what new information we learn, you know, I think the severity of his punishment will be decided then, because we don't really know exactly what Urban's saying he knew about. Well, he's going back and forth, and we did catch him in a lie. And so if there's more lies that, you know, that they end up discovering against Urban, maybe he doesn't survive it. But, you know, I think he will, because he's a great football coach.
Listen, Urban had a really bad press conference at Media Day. He said, you know, I wasn't prepared. Well, he gave the same answer 10 times, so he was prepared. He had talking points. It was just bad. Like, I don't know who gave him the heads up on it. He had a really lousy press conference. If that's the worst moment for him, he'll survive that. People don't have a problem with a coach lying to me or you. He lies to the NCAA, he's done. If he lies to his athletic director, he's 50-50. But my gut feeling is he was just lousy at that Big Ten media press conference, and that's the worst.
By the way, it wasn't just one press conference. It was over the course of the whole day. It was a morning press conference, and there was an afternoon availability. It wasn't just like one, you know, bad soundbite. The one thing I would also counter with is this is the same school, by the way, that fired Woody Hayes. It also fired Jim Tressel. So it's not like they haven't, I don't want to say sacrifice, but gotten rid of really powerful coaches. So we'll see what the answer is.
That's a hell of a point that I hadn't thought about in terms of Woody Hayes, Jim Tressel.
Yeah.
They have a history here. But Colin, I'll just say this. The media is not going to let it go.
No, they'll attack
it. And because it's not just about lying to the media that one time. The media's contention will be, Urban will have to figure out a way to push back. It'll be, no, you covered up for an assistant coach who was in an abusive relationship with his wife, and you did it because he was Earl Bruce's grandson.
And twice.
Yeah.
You could argue there's two different instances, Florida and Ohio State, when he intervened.
Yeah, and so I think the school, I think Gene Smith will bear the brunt of this. I think Urban will get a 2-3-4-game suspension. But I think, to me, what it looks like, they're on the path of figuring out a way for Urban Meyer to survive. We're talking about right before the season.
Right.
Oh, this could be very problematic for Ohio State. And if Gene Smith, who's in his 60s, has had a long career at Ohio State, if he's willing to be the scapegoat on this and willing to let Urban walk, and that's where I think this is headed.
Do you think that's possible?
I do think it's possible because, again, if Gene Smith knew and if Urban Meyer, they all kind of convened and say, okay, are we going to keep this guy on? We know. Now, he hadn't been charged in 2015 by the police, but there are these issues, and it goes back to 2009. If they both talked about it, Gene Smith, you know, is Urban Meyer going to say, okay, well, our AD and I had communication with this. Who's ultimately responsible, the head coach or his boss? I don't know how they untangle this. I don't think they're going to fire both of them.
All right, welcome back. Time for Last Call. Let's move to Canada, where Johnny Manziel made his long-awaited return to football Friday, and it couldn't have gone worse.
Ugh.
With Johnny throwing four interceptions in the first half before getting benched. Cowher, you writing Manziel off after that game?
He's never looked smaller. I mean, honestly, I'm for guys like Manziel and Tebow going to the CFL, but he looked absolutely overwhelmed. In fact, even though that was an interception, that was the one play that I was
looked good.
I mean, he had a little Russell Wilson. He's running around, but, I mean, like this throw. That's just brutal. That's a brutal throw.
Yeah, he's dusting off a lot of rust. He didn't have a lot of time with this personnel and this particular offense. I'm not going to write him off just yet off of one game. We got to see more. It's no different than – well, it is different than Lamar Jackson again. It's – I'm not going to write him off just yet. All right, to New York, where Odell Beckham Jr. may not have a new contract, but he does have a new look, blazing a trail in the world of dental fashion by getting diamond crosses implanted on his teeth. Cowher, you like this look?
I'm going to the dentist right after the show to do the same thing. He's a trailblazer.
Too much money and too much time and too much youth, that's how you end up with diamonds in your teeth, where nobody can really see him unless you make great effort for people to see him. He's got money to burn.
That's generational.
He's got money to burn.